Every morning, when Charles Barnes drives to work, he gets a feel for what the pollen count might be just by looking out the window. But when he arrives at the office, he won't pull up the pollen count on his computer screen to confirm his predictions. Instead, he'll grab some tools, head to the rooftop, and start gathering pollen. He's Kansas City's pollen counter, and today on Central Standard, we'll find out how he generates the daily pollen count. Plus, Kansas has been in a drought for years. Every time we get a torrential downpour, we shrug off the inconvenience, hoping for enough rain to bring us out of it. But no such luck. So what would it take to get out of the drought? We'll explore that and more on Central Standard after this news. True allergy sufferers check the pollen count to figure out things like whether to roll down the car windows or leave them sealed shut. Sometimes it's just useful to confirm that there is, in fact, a reason for all that hacking and sneezing. But essentially, we take it for granted that such a thing as a pollen count exists. Here at Central Standard, we've been wondering, how do you go about counting pollen? And who actually does it? Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Later in the show, we'll find out what it would take for Kansas to pull out of the drought. But for now, it's my pleasure to introduce Kansas City's pollen counter. Meet Dr. Charles Barnes. He works at Children's Mercy Hospital, where the pollen count is conducted every day. Good morning, Dr. Barnes.
Good morning, Gina.
And you like to go by Charlie, is that right?
That's fine, yes.
Okay. How did you get into this pollen counting thing?
Well, I came over to Children's Mercy in about 1990 to work on allergies, and primarily the proteins involved in allergies. My training's as biochemist and proteins. And the National Allergy Bureau was starting up about that time as part of the American Academy for Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. And the Academy was putting together a pollen counting network, and we joined the network, and they established standards and established the kind of standards that would provide for where you put the collector and actually how you do the count and how you set your microscope and how the count would be reported. And from there, we started a pollen counting station. And the station started with a really simple rotor rod device, but we've been doing the count about the same way for the last, 24 years or so.
How literally should we take the word counting? I mean, when I look at the air, there's a bunch of invisible stuff in it, I'm guessing, and that is what you're counting, right?
Yes. Actually, what we're producing is a statistical estimate, hopefully a good statistical estimate, of the pollen in the air. And, of course, pollen are reproductive structures from plants. And so we have lots of plants. One of the main things to realize about pollen is that plants can either be pollinated through the air or they can be pollinated by insects. And so if you have a plant that has a nice, pretty flower to it or a nice smell to it, I noticed there was some lavender out front of the studio here, those plants are trying to attract insects, and so the pollen from those plants is likely to be heavier and not go floating around in the air, and so not very many people are going to be sensitized because not many people are going to be exposed to it.
So in some ways, are the plants that we're most likely to be really aware of through our senses the ones least likely to be highly represented in the pollen count?
Exactly.
Interesting.
And it's the plants that have flowers that you don't notice, the little bitty flowers or trees that you don't really see the flower on at all, those are the ones that spread their pollen out on the wind and fill the air full of pollen grains. And those are the ones that you're most likely to be allergic to because you're most likely to be exposed to.
So how long is your commute to work every day?
My commute's about 40 minutes, 40 to 45 minutes typically.
So on that 40-minute journey through Kansas City and the surrounding areas, I'm guessing, when you are looking out your window, do you start making predictions about what the pollen count is going to be just based on your own unassisted observations? No tools, no anything. You're just looking around.
Well, also, I live out on a small farm, and so I'm constantly looking around to see what's putting on seed heads, putting on flowering structures. So I have an idea of what's going to be in the air on any particular day. But the count itself, or the concentration of pollen in the air, actually depends on a lot of factors and depends very strongly on weather.
Well, I want to get to the actual counting process in just a second, but today's count is being conducted right now, so you don't have the results yet. Based on your observations, your informal observations, what would some of your predictions be?
Oh, I think it will still be high today. We've been flirting between moderate and high. Basically, we're at the end of grass season here, and so the Timothy grass, which is generally about the last major grass in our agricultural area to put out pollen, is just starting to put on seed heads, and we're just sort of finishing up with orchard grass. And those pollens will be in the air today. We're pretty much through fescue and brome and some of the other native grass, some of the other grasses that are planted for agriculture and also native grasses.
Okay, so now I want you to walk me through what you do when you count the pollen and not what you do when you're predicting it informally. It's hard for me to imagine exactly what you're looking at, how you're looking at it, and how you're coming up with all of these numbers. So maybe just start at the beginning. You get to work. You're ready to go up to the rooftop, right?
Right. On the roof of Children's Mercy, away from the helicopter port, is a machine that's about the size of a small stool. And that machine draws in air constantly. It has a vacuum device on it. It pulls air in constantly. This air is pulled in through a very small opening, which accelerates all the particles in it. Anything that's heavier than the air itself, which will include pollen and spores and tire particles and just about everything else that's heavier than the air, will be accelerated very rapidly and go smashing into a slide that's mounted on the back of this collector.
Do you collect things other than pollen there? I would imagine, I mean, we hear about air pollution all the time.
I can look at the slide because the slide moves continuously throughout the day. I can look at the slide and tell you when morning rush hour is and when evening rush hour is and pretty much tell you how bad the air in Kansas City is on any particular day. So, yes, it does collect a lot of particles other than the pollen and the spores. But actually, pollen and spores are major particles in the air.
Interesting. How do you define particle? Was that what you just said, whatever is heavier than the air itself?
Right. Just about anything that's heavier than the air itself that you can weigh. And the EPA actually does a particulate count, which is a little different from a particle count. But a particulate count is reported in grams or in milligrams or in mass per volume of air. So
when you pull the slide, we're going to get into some of that a little later, but when you pull, so you go and you look at this slide. What
right.
is the next thing you do?
Oh, well, I take the slide out. I take it back down to the laboratory, and I put a stain on it. And the stain basically does two things. It makes the pollen swell a little bit so they'll have a characteristic look, and it colors them fuchsia because the stain is fuchsin. And so they're nice purple-colored spots on the slide. And then I take the slide and look at it under the microscope. And we have a certain protocol. We count a certain fraction of the total slide. We take the number of pollen in that fraction, multiply it by some constants, and divide that by the volume of air. And we produce pollen in a concentration of grains per cubic meter of air, averaged per 24 hours.
So each different kind of pollen has a different look about it that you make easier to perceive by staining it.
Right. They tend to be quite characteristic. Now, all the grasses pretty much look the same, but all the trees pretty much look different. And so, if you've done this for a while, and there's another person at Children's Mercy, Manati Dar, who's actually doing the count as we speak, And we both have gone to classes with the Pan American Aerobiology Association and the National Allergy Bureau and have learned the characteristics of these pollen.
Is there any that really stands out to you as being very pretty? When we look at the allergy count as allergy sufferers, we do not sort of jump for joy when we see our special pollens.
Oh.
But maybe there are some that you like to see. Maybe some of them are pretty.
Well, there's one that I hardly ever see, but very rarely we see a dandelion pollen. And dandelion pollen are very pretty. It looks like almost a Christmas ornament. If you could design a Christmas ornament that looked like a dandelion pollen, it would be really, really pretty.
So you get excited when you see that one?
It is. It's nice to see, mostly because it's very unusual. Dandelion, being a flower, is typically insect pollinated, and so we rarely see a dandelion pollen in the count.
It seems like the human-technology relationship is really interesting here. I mean, the tools obviously make an official count possible, but there needs to be someone who can read all of the stuff that's been collected on this slide.
Right. Somebody has to be able to look at these pollen and recognize them and recognize them consistently. And we do, we do standardizations between different counting stations. We have meetings where we go and put a pollen on the screen and talk about what it is. And there are some that sometimes they're new or sometimes they're not really characteristic that we'll have pretty good discussions about. And so
new pollens. Tell me more about that.
Well, they're pollens that would be new to us. In other words, a species moving into our area. For instance, we don't have many olive trees in this area. But we might see an olive pollen one time. Well, maybe somebody has planted an olive tree on their patio downtown as an ornamental, and we've gotten one pollen out there, and so we don't see olive pollen much, and so I'm looking it up in the books, and we take it to the meetings, and people from California say, oh yeah, that's olive.
So one person having one tree on a balcony is enough to come across your radar?
It's possible, yes.
That's fascinating. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Charlie Barnes, Kansas City's pollen counter, about how he does what he does and what he sees through his special tools, which it sounds like are in some ways less complicated than I would have imagined.
Right. They're very simple. Basically, it's just a microscope and a stained slide and a trained person. We have cameras on the microscopes and we can take pictures of these pollen and we email pictures of pollens around the country getting expert opinions on this and that. But for the most part, what you see are the routine pollens. And we know about what's going to be in the air at any one time of the year. What we don't know is exactly when it's going to start and exactly when it's going to stop.
Who writes the copy that goes along with the pollen count? Because it's very lovely and sort of... Yeah, there's just a little, like, paragraph-long story every day to accompany the numbers.
Well, Manati and I take turns writing that. I generally will cover that, but sometimes Manati will cover that if I'm out of town or on vacation.
Do you mind if I read a little excerpt from yesterday's?
Go ahead.
Calculations indicate that there is enough allergen protein in a single grass pollen to cause a sneeze in a sensitive person. We still expect the pollen count to take a dive as soon as the real hot weather starts. However, we are a couple weeks away from that weather. I like that you're thinking when you do the pollen count about that one sensitive person out there and taking into account that that matters, even if the numbers indicate that maybe people should be very comfortable.
Well, that's one of the important things about allergy is people have different sensitivities. And so I may say the count's down today, but there's still some people out there who are sensitive enough to have a really runny nose on that particular day. And so I don't want to tell those people, you're supposed to be feeling good. Go feel good.
Yeah, no, that's very sensitive of you. There's a lot of language in the pollen count itself that I want to kind of decode because I've been, as a person who consults this for my own uses, interested, especially in the category known as other. And I'm interested in that because I have kind of a weird allergy and I'm never sure if the thing I'm allergic to, which happens to be nettle, is buried within other or if I'm just scot-free on a given day.
Well, we recognize nettle. Nettle is one of our recognized categories. Other is the category that, number one, things go in if we really don't recognize it. But a lot of the things we don't recognize because they're very badly damaged. You know, if there's rough weather around, these pollen have been floating around in the air. Sometimes they get beat up pretty badly, and those pollen are very hard to recognize. The characteristics have been distorted, and so
what does a beat up pollen look like?
It looks pretty ragged. They get torn. Grass pollen, in particular, which is one of the main things in the air right now, will pop. And grass, being in the grain or gramini family, has little granules in it, little starch granules in it. And so these starch granules will go spilling out all over the air and all throughout the air. And the outside of the pollen will sort of look collapsed. And so it looks sort of like a crumpled piece of tin foil.
Huh.
And it's really hard to tell if this is a grass that has collapsed or maybe it's a tree pollen that's collapsed. But it was certainly a pollen, and that allergenic material has been spilled out in the air and is making somebody miserable, probably.
So there are two columns, and yesterday's five top pollens were pine, grass, pollen, other,
Compositae. Yeah.
And then actually I'm not seeing the fifth one on my sheet of paper. But then next to each of those categories is a count and a percent. How should we interpret those?
Right. Well, that's mostly for the local allergists, and they are because they're the people that are out there testing patients on a daily basis, and we send most of our local allergists the pollen count every day, and the counts like that are mostly for them. But if you know what you're allergic to, and the counts, if you really watch it, you can start to recognize. Well, you know, I get along fine with the grass pollen count of 50 or so, which is in the high range, but it's okay. If the grass pollen count gets up in the 300 range, I know I'm going to have some problems.
And there's also a mold count. Are you the one who does that as
well?
Yes,
we do the mold count.
Explain the mold count.
Well, mold is fungi, and molds basically reproduce by throwing spores into the air. And there are lots of different kinds of spores out there. When we started doing this, we tried to explain in the little written part the names of some of these spores, and the names can be somewhat unusual, things like cladosporum and aspergillus and penicillium and stachybotrys.
But smuts is always there,
right,
which is a
smut.
Funny name.
Yeah.
Though I don't know what it means exactly in this context.
Smut is a whole category of mold, and they're all plant pathogens. And so you have corn smut and wheat smut and sorghum smut and grass smut. And so there are lots of different kinds of smuts in Kansas City here. And I always thought that was kind of funny myself.
So just to the naked eye, how does a mold appear just distinctly different from a pollen from the get-go?
Well, typically they're smaller, and they don't pick up stain. The mold has a different coating on the outside of it, and so the mold doesn't pick up the stain. But mold spores actually have color unto themselves, and some of them are virtually colorless. Some of them look like some sort of specter in the air, except they're very, very tiny, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5 microns or something like that.
So when you do the pollen count, you do it from the Children's Mercy Hospital location in downtown Kansas City, right? Is pollen distributed fairly evenly throughout the city and region, or could the pollen count in your little corner of the city where you're doing the counting be misleading depending on the location of the person reading the count? Like, what if I have a lawn that just happens to be covered in some particular kind of plant?
Well, there are great research papers that have been published about the distribution of pollen. But basically, our count is done from a collector that's about 5 stories in the air. It's pretty tall, and we're on the hill down there, so we're pretty high up. So what we're doing is taking a sort of an average sample of the area down there. If you are closer to the ground, if you're underneath an ash tree and the ash tree is pollinating, the ash pollen is going to go up tenfold. But if they're pollinating ash trees in the area, we will see a few ash trees in the pollen collection.
So the higher up you get, the more representative it becomes.
Right. It sort of starts to average out. It's what's flying around, and we pick up a little of it. But that does bring up a good point. One of the reasons we do the pollen count is because when people know what they're allergic to and know what they're sensitized to, they can employ some avoidances. You know, if I'm picking up 300 grass pollen, that means that a grass pollen person, when they're walking outside, is going to be exposed to a lot of grass pollen. So if you're grass pollen allergic, maybe it's a good idea not to go outside so much. And when you do have to go outside, as soon as you get in, wash your face, wash your hair if you can. When you come in for the night, throw those clothes in the wash, go take a shower, get
serious.
The pollen off of you, and you'll feel a lot better for the time you're inside.
Wow. So, I mean, that's a level of precaution I hadn't realized people out there were taking. Is that essentially how you recommend people using this information?
Yes, that's one of the best ways. It's the way I use it. When I start seeing ragweed in the count, I know I'm very ragweed allergic. When I go out and work in the farm, I'll actually wear a mask when the ragweed's really high. When I come in, I'll take the mask off. I'll take all my clothes off. They go right in the wash. I go right in the shower. That way I don't bring the ragweed to my indoor environment. And so the time I'm indoors, I'm not exposed.
You know, you've talked a lot during this conversation about things flying around in the air or plants throwing things into the air. And you've talked about your own behavior and how you modify your behavior according to the pollen count, which you yourself come up with. Because of what you do, do you think you see the air differently than I probably do?
I probably do, yes.
How do you see the air?
Oh, well, I mean, I see the air as composed of things that can cause health problems. I see the air as small particles. I see the air as pollution. I see the air as nitrogen oxides and sulfur oxides. I see the air as tire particles and things that can get in your lungs and clog up your lungs. There's a really good field of research that's been developing over the last quite a few years that deals with the particles you're exposed to and your overall health, especially the health of your lungs. But the health of your lungs is actually related very strongly to your overall health and your cardiac health. And so it didn't really surprise me when the people at Harvard who've been doing all the particulate studies in large cities found that cities who have a higher particle count have a higher cardiac, have more cardiac problems. And so you know, you're not really exposed. I mean, you don't really think about air having particles in it, but the more particles you're breathing in, the harder your lungs have to work to get rid of them, and harder your nose has to work to get rid of them.
How is Kansas City's particle count?
Kansas City's particle count is not too bad. We fortunately get some really nice winds through here. I know we've got some pretty good wind today, and especially when we get wind off of the middle of Kansas or we get wind off of Nebraska. Those nice, cool, crisp mornings that you feel so good, the outdoor particle count goes down in the 300,000s, and it's just delightful. It's easy breathing. You know, it's just really delightful to breathe.
So 300,000 is good.
Yeah, 300,000 is good.
That sounds like a large number.
Right, but it that's really pretty good. 3 million is not so good. When we start to get a brown haze over the city, I know the particle count's going to be around 3 million or so. Now, my particle count is different from the particulate count that EPA regulates, but they are related.
So every day you do the pollen count. How much of your day does that take up?
Well, either Manati or I will take about a quarter of our day doing the pollen count. And on some days it takes a little more than others. Since this is a manual count, and there are literally thousands of pollen on the collection in any one day, those days are going to take a little longer. On the days when we've maybe only got a couple of hundred particles on the count that we need to identify, it goes by pretty quick.
So the worse our allergies are, the busier you are.
That's true, yes.
Well, so what do you do with the rest of your day? Can you tell us a little bit about your research?
Oh, certainly. I do research in allergies and asthma. Initially here in Kansas City, I started doing research on the proteins that people are allergic to. And when we describe our allergies, we describe our allergies to the whole organism, like a person would say they're allergic to cat. But in fact, they're actually only allergic to a couple of proteins that cat spreads around the environment. And when I started in 1990, or actually Dr. Portnoy and I started as early as 1985, to identify some of those proteins, and we identified some from fungi, and we identified, several from fungi, and at the same time, groups all over the world were identifying those proteins from cats and dogs and dust mites and lots of different organisms. And so now there's a really large database of allergic proteins that that people have identified. And so that work has sort of been done, and now we're mostly involved with where you find these proteins and what concentrations they are in the environment, and how do you control your exposure to them. Because if you can control your exposure to them, many of the allergy problems that people have can be avoided.
That is so fascinating. Before we go, can I ask you kind of a selfish question?
Sure.
As I mentioned, I have a nettle allergy, and I'd like to kind of make peace with my allergen, and I'm hoping that it has a beautiful pollen. I'm wondering, can you describe the nettle pollen for me?
Yes, it's one of those things, you know it when you see it. but nettle pollen is relatively small, and it's about maybe 20 microns in diameter. It's generally light colored. It doesn't pick up a lot of stain. It has a fairly characteristic pore pattern on it, such that it has three areas where you can definitely spot the pores, and the pores have a very characteristic look to them. And fortunately in this area, it's not one of the major pollen.
I am
grateful.
You
probably had an encounter with stinging nettle, right?
No, just the regular kind. But sadly, it's time for me to say goodbye to Dr. Barnes. Thank you so much for being here today. It was fun talking with you.
Thank you, Gina.
If you'd like to see action shots of Dr. Barnes counting Kansas City's pollen, we'll have some for you later today. Just head on over to our website, kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. Central Standard will return with a check-in on the drought, specifically what it would take to get out of it.